Tim Versalotti, our brilliant friend and professor of political science at Western New England University and the head of that university's poll, you're considered to be one of the most insightful pollsters. So what can you give us about polling these days?
Oh, first, thanks for the compliments, Alan.
You deserve them. You deserve them.
Well, polling right now is focusing on the 2014 midterms and even on the 2016 presidential. And we need to take these data with a big grain of salt. It's when you see matchups this far out from an election, you're really testing name recognition, and their predictive power is not that great. It's fun for political junkies. It makes for great conversation. But we really can't predict with any certainty outcomes of elections this far out.
Sure. Who was Barack Obama? It was going to be Hillary for sure. And it
That's
wasn't.
Right.
So you make a very good point. But can you nuance these polls in such a way because one thing is asking the question. The other thing is the sort of intuitive, you know, interpretation of the results, how salient they are, how much passion is behind some of these answers that ordinary folks give.
And that's a common criticism raised by scholars of survey research, that when we're asking people these questions, we ought to be asking on a scale, so that if you ask, do you approve or disapprove, then you want to say, well, do you strongly or not so strongly, so that you really can get at what people are thinking. And as pollsters doing telephone surveys, we rarely include the don't know option in our list of recited response categories that our interviewers are reading, because there are folks who do have opinions but may not want to share them, and if they know, they can say don't know, they'll take that out. But sometimes, especially on a new policy, it's not a bad idea to add to the question this clause at the end, or haven't you really thought much about this? And then you can get a sense of how much of that opinion is firm and how much of it is ephemeral. It's just what people are saying to get through the interview, to get you off the phone, or just to appear more engaged than they really are.
I'd like to see a tag question, which is, are you lying? Because there are some things you don't tell your pollster. I've always been interested in that stuff, you know. People aren't going to admit that they're racist, and they're not going to admit that they're crazy, and they're not going to admit that they're sexist. And I think some people don't tell the truth to the pollsters and don't tell the truth to their parents, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and there have been experiments and studies where to tease out attitudes on sensitive issues, race in particular, and gender to some extent, sometimes you'll couch this as, in general, do you think people view X or Y? And so that you try to project their attitudes onto a larger population to try and get at, not in a way that's not revealing something dark or unpleasant about them. The other approach is to try a different mode. Don't have a live interviewer, perhaps do an automated survey, or do a survey online, a self-administered online survey. And we have seen research that shows that incidents of some questionable behaviors, overconsumption of alcohol, cigarette smoking, things like that, you see higher estimates of people's use when they can take these surveys in private, either online or an old-fashioned pencil and paper survey.
One of my favorite people in the whole world is Governor Deval Patrick. And I wonder whether or not, there's a lot of talk, I've been saying it for years, that he would be the ideal guy to replace Eric Holder. And I wonder whether or not, on your way to the presidency, Professor, this would be a good thing for him to do, as opposed to go into the private sector, which is what he always says he's going to do.
Right, right. And you've said in the past, when you've talked to him about this, he said it after his term is up as governor, it's time to return to the private sector.
Right.
It's awfully hard to say no, though, when the president comes and asks you to serve your country. And it is true, Patrick's name is bandied about as a potential presidential candidate in 2016. And he also had served in the Justice Department under President Clinton.
Indeed.
And so he would be a natural fit for Attorney General.
And it's a good place, not unknown, for somebody to be Attorney General and be nominated to be on the Supreme Court of the United States.
There as well. And again, we have to be mindful the composition of the court as it is right now. Some of the justices it's hard to say whether they're nearing retirement, but they certainly, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg,
sure,
has had some significant health problems. Once Obama is sworn in for his second term, I think the Supreme Court watch will begin, because the Democrats have a 10-seat working majority in the Senate, 53 Democrats and two independents caucusing with them. And if a Supreme Court justice whose thinking is in sync with the president wanted to go, now would be the time to go. And so it will be very interesting to see if early in the second Obama term we see a vacancy or two on the Supreme Court.
How is the Supreme Court doing in the polling? Do you know? I mean, in the past, you know, the Supreme Court was seen as a legitimate institution. I see it as a yet another United States Senate, you know, 5 Republicans, 4 Democrats. I just got severely criticized by a judge for suggesting the same thing in the Court of Appeals here in New York. But is there a public perception of the court that you can sort of help us with?
Yes, and there was a real sea change in perception of the court after the court had to resolve the 2000 presidential race,
yeah,
between Al Gore and George Bush. Public perceptions of the court as immune to politics really changed, and the court's standing suffered, and we've seen that hold up over time. And that made last summer's decision in the case involving the Affordable Care Act very interesting, because And I think Chief Justice Roberts was mindful of this, not so much that it steered his opinion, but he understood the environment in which the court was operating.
But he was also partisan, Tim, in that he said, it's a lousy law. He didn't like it, but he still ruled for it.
That's right. And it came in the context of public perceptions. Would the court shoot down the law for partisan or ideological reasons? And in the end, that is not what happened, although scholars will debate for a long time.
I need to get a little bit more out of you on another topic, and I want to ask you about Chris Murphy going to the United States Senate from Connecticut. You know, Lieberman, who I don't like, is leaving. Did I say that? And the question is, will Murphy make a substantive difference for Connecticut?
I think he will. If you just look at their rankings by organizations that track major votes in Congress, Chris Murphy is a much more reliable vote for the Democrats than Joe Lieberman was late in his career.
Right.
And so you will see a very different style of representation there. It was somewhat poignant watching or listening to Senator Lieberman's farewell speech on the floor of the Senate.
Here I didn't catch that part because I was throwing up as he was making it.
Well, here was a man so full of promise, at one point perceived to be one of the leaders of the National Party, giving a speech in which neither party was embracing him, and it brought a very quiet end to a long career in the Senate. And so Murphy will be a more reliable vote for the Democrats. He's also snagged some very interesting committee assignments. He's on health, education, labor, and pensions, where he says he's going to work on health care reform further, because there's certainly more to do. And he's on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And his response to that was, great, this will allow me to promote exports from Connecticut while serving on that committee. Some fairly high-profile assignments.
Well, some people, Tim, love the idea when they're a senator of being on foreign relations, because it sets them up to be a presidential contender.
It's true. You develop expertise. You take a lot more trips abroad in terms of meeting foreign leaders and heading to parts of the world that you wouldn't ordinarily travel to as a United States senator. You're also confirming nominees for ambassadorships, and this is the first stop for any treaties that need ratification by the Senate. And so it does provide a realm of experience that you could draw on down the road. And Chris Murphy is the youngest member of the United States Senate. He's only 39.
Yeah, he's terrific.
So he's got a while to toil in those vineyards and then emerge as a potential national candidate.
And we're very proud here at WAMC that he's been a regular guest on this very program that you're talking on, the Congressional Corner. And at that point, I say to Tim Versalotti, who's one of the brightest and most interesting political scientists I've known, he's got his feet on the ground, and he thinks in terms of, you know, a global sort of approach, which is not always something that scholars do.
Thank you, Alan.
So I thank you, Tim, and we hope that it'll be a great year for you.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much.